On the Record on News Talk.
Brought to you by PwC. Great minds think unalike. Different skill sets, diverse opinions, it all adds up to the new equation.
Well, one man who is very familiar to all of us and has become very familiar to all of us in 2021, who has been doing a lot of work on the United States, is Kerry's own CNN correspondent Donie O'Sullivan. Now, a lot of us might have been watching what was going on Capitol Hill in the attempted insurrection on January the 6th, and it might have been slightly surprising in the middle of all of that to hear a Kerry accent explain to us exactly what was going on the ground. But it's something that Donie O'Sullivan has been covering for a long time. In fact, long-time listeners to this show will have heard him coming on talking about some of the misinformation and disinformation that there's been in the United States. But he's now become such a household name that he's one of those special grades of people who no longer needs a surname. In one of the papers last weekend, he was simply described as Donie. When I talked to him during the week, I asked him, first of all, how he feels about not needing a surname anymore.
I don't know how Donie Cassidy would feel about that. But it's been very humbling and overwhelming, really, all the love and support from home this past year. I'm kind of waiting for it to all collapse and people eventually to come at me.
Talk to us then about the year that you've had, because you've been covering the misinformation beat and some of the manifestations of that for a while. But I suppose it was January the 6th when we were all watching CNN to see exactly what was going on in the Capitol. And then suddenly you've got this Cara Savine accent blaring out that I guess catapulted you to a lot of people's attention.
Yeah, I've been covering misinformation online for years now, but with Storyful, which was set up by Mark Little in Dublin, and with CNN kind of, you know, mostly reporting on what was happening online. But throughout 2020, you know, particularly in the last few weeks and months of the election campaign, I kind of went out into the fields speaking to a lot of Trump supporters, a lot of folks who were, you know, echoing the lies they were seeing online about COVID and the conspiracy theories, and also about the election itself. I was going to be full of fraud and all this. So we had been kind of traveling along, and particularly in that critical period, I think, between Election Day and January 6th of last year. I think I actually spoke to you on the weekend when the election results were, when the election was finally projected for Biden. And I think I was speaking to you from Harrisburg, which is the capital of Pennsylvania. And that was actually at one of the first organized Stop the Steal events. And Stop the Steal is that movement that kind of went on to become pivotal in January 6th. So you could really kind of, you know, sense that something was brewing in that period. And I remember 2 days before, you know, the Capitol attack, I was down in Georgia at a Trump rally. He was down there for the Senate runoff elections. And, you know, at this point, it was 2 weeks to Biden being inaugurated. And I was asking people there, you know, they were all saying, no, Biden won't become president. And, you know, I was saying to people, how? And everybody was talking about, so many people were talking about Wednesday, January 6th, it's all going to, we're going to overturn the results of the election. And so there was all this stuff brewing and building up to it. You know, it was certainly surreal to be there. And shocking, but I wouldn't say, you know, I wouldn't say as crazy it was, I wasn't surprised, because a lot of people were saying, you know, a lot of people genuinely believed, because of lies, that American democracy had been stolen from them. So if you're in that state of mind, you know, doing something as drastic as storming the Capitol might be rational.
Maybe this isn't fair, but you do sometimes get the impression from some of your reporting on the day that you did show up not expecting for it just to be a rally outside the White House, but for something more to kick off. Is that the case? Or if not, then at what point in the course of the day did you begin to sense that this wasn't just going to be a peaceful show of strength, that this was going to turn a bit sinister?
You know, I mean, perhaps it's not a good reflection of me, but I didn't really expect it to turn the way it did. You know, we went there. We knew it was going to be a big event, and possibly sort of demonstrations outside the Capitol. But, you know, the moment I knew things were going very, very downhill was we started to see people walking from the White House where Trump was speaking towards the Capitol. So we started walking with them. And just as we got there, we were there the moment that the first kind of barrier was knocked over, kind of the first police line. And you know, there was very it was a, as has been reported since, you know, there's the sort of police presence that day was quite low given what was happening. But yeah, I was there and we saw this barricade got knocked over and people just started streaming onto the lawn of the Capitol. Some of them, you know, wearing kind of military tactile type gear. And that was the moment where I was like, oh my God, this shouldn't be happening. And, you know, we kind of called the newsroom to say there were people now heading right for the front door of the Capitol.
Which must have been a fairly sobering thing to have to even phone into the newsroom. I wonder, do you enjoy the particular beat that you're in? I mean, obviously, I'm not expecting you to say that you hate it or that you're a miserable time or that you want to be put on something else. But for a lot of people, covering something like that must be, it would be very challenging or almost demoralizing because you see guys who just can't be rationalized or just can't be spoken to. And yet you seem to be doing it for so long that there must be some level of you that finds this engaging or in a strange way sort of enjoyable.
I mean, I just think it's very important in that I think for, you know, I've always been very interested in the role of the internet and in politics and that crossover. You know, I started in UCD around the time that that Obama had been elected first in 2008.
Writing for and, the College, you know, Tribune, there was, but I consistently won't hold that against you.
UCD's premium paper, yes. But you know, always fascinated of how the role social media plays in politics and in society. And you know, I think for a long time we viewed that as, you know, there's the internet and then there's the real world. And more and more and more we've seen over the past decade, I think, how, you know, those lines don't really exist anymore. And I mean, I think what we saw on the Capitol at January 6th was kind of the physical manifestation of the online mob, you know? So I just kind of think that that's what we're covering and trying to figure out how people's perceptions of reality are altered and shaped by what they're seeing on their Facebook feed is a really important thing to figure out. I mean, personally, you know, I feel very privileged to be able to do what I'm doing, getting to travel around the US and speaking to all sorts of folks, even if some of them tell me to go F myself. But, you know, I certainly enjoyed the aspect of getting out and kind of getting to go, you know, come out from behind the computer screen and go into the real world.
You're not told to go F yourself as much as some people might think, but often it's because maybe it's because you're showing up and there isn't CNN branding on your microphone, but because you show up with an accent which is partly American and partly Kerry, and maybe they don't think of you as being from one of the major networks the same way that they would usually have some antipathy for.
Yeah, I mean, folks are often surprised, as I am. You know, they kind of ask the question, you know, why is there an Irish guy working for CNN? Why is he standing in a field with me in Alabama? I'm like, your guess is as good as mine. But, you know, I think most folks, yeah, a lot of people obviously in the US have a connection to Ireland or feel like they have a connection to Ireland. So it is a good icebreaker. But look, I mean, I will say, even for people who don't care about the accent and aren't fans of CNN, I find from a lot of folks, you know, they might really dislike CNN or dislike any mainstream media, but they do often appreciate that, you know, we've at least gone to the trouble of going there and talking to them. And, you know, that's one thing I try and do in all our reports is oftentimes, you know, folks will watch some of the reports I do where I speak to people about what they believe. And, you know, people will say, oh my God, that CNN made that person out to be an awful fool or whatever. But, you know, you go back to that person sometimes and they think they're quite happy that, you know, we haven't chopped up their words in any way and we've let them say their piece, even if I am saying it's misinformation. So, you know, a lot of folks are appreciative just to be heard, even if it is by CNN.
So a lot of the question marks around the legitimacy of Biden's win or the contention that Donald Trump should still be in office goes back to QAnon. And for people who are listening who don't understand what QAnon is, basically this all stems from an anonymous online poster called Q, who masquerades themselves as being deeply embedded in the American intelligence community, who believes that Donald Trump is still the rightful president and that ultimately in an event called the Great Awakening or the Great Storm of some sort, that Trump will come back and overthrow the pedophile cabal, which has been secretly running America and the Western world. Now, even only saying those words out loud only highlights how absurd or ridiculous or far-fetched this idea is. And yet the only thing that this theory has going for it is that somebody anonymous sounds very authoritative online. You must sometimes have to pinch yourself to wonder how such an obviously bizarre or far-fetched idea has grown so popular and now has so many people who will believe it hook, line, and sinker.
Yeah, and I think, you know, so much, especially after January 6th, you know, there was a real demand on the part of the public and of newsrooms and of Congress to kind of figure out better, you know, how is it that conspiracy theories in the 21st century have taken such a hold on people? And I spent a lot of this year, you know, going, trying to figure that out, sitting down for long interviews and long spells, talking to people who have either lost people to conspiracy theories, parents, friends, spouses, and people who've gone down the kind of rabbit holes themselves. You know, two women stick out, one lady in South Carolina, in Myrtle Beach, who went down the QAnon rabbit hole, and another lady in Texas who was an anti-vaxxer and didn't want to get her child vaccinated. And in so many cases, I've kind of found that, you know, a lot of it comes from loneliness. A lot of it is people, one, searching for answers on the internet, but also trying to find a community, right? And, you know, you talk to people again and again, and it can be a very nice thing to be in a community online where you all kind of feel like you know something and you understand something that the rest of the world don't understand. And, you know, it's all kind of positive reinforcement. And, you know, that can be a kind of nice place to be. So I guess, you know, a lot of it kind of, I think if we really want to, you know, there's so many elements involved into why people, you know, buy into a lot of this stuff. But I do think that element of community is so, so important. And that, of course, is what, you know, Mark Zuckerberg went out to do when he built Facebook, was to connect the world. But unfortunately, we've seen that, you know, online communities can be used for very destructive purposes as well. And by the way, I'm no means trying to suggest this is all a Facebook problem. It's there's so many layers even beyond social media that we have to understand if we want to even begin to comprehend what's happening.
It must be particularly worrying, though, when you see not only how QAnon can manifest in the loss of life that there was on January the 6th, but that the story can then just be molded or rewritten to fit whatever the circumstances are. Like, for example, I remember 2 weeks afterwards, I remember in the middle of Joe Biden's inaugural and seeing some screen grabs of some of the messaging channels and message boards that QAnon adherents use. And they were talking about, oh, here it comes now. Here comes the storm. Someone's going to storm the Capitol landing, and that they're going to take over, and that Trump is going to stay in office. And then noon comes and Biden takes the oath and Biden gets sworn in and Biden becomes president. And they're wondering, oh, what happens now? But they always manage to find some way to rewrite the theory to suit their own ends.
Exactly. And I mean, look, when you dig into a lot of this, the sort of overarching theory of a evil cabal and stuff like that goes back, you know, centuries. A lot of it is rooted in anti-Semitism. And also you can kind of see it, you know, how it can be rewritten here. You know, I think it was the Sunday Times or somebody did an interview on O'Connell Street where there were people repeating QAnon conspiracy theories, but, you know, applying them to prominent people in Ireland and to prominent people in the media. So, yeah, I guess that is how powerful it is. It's an enduring conspiracy theory that it can be rewritten. That is probably why it is so powerful. But, you know, some people kind of drop off along the way when they see that, oh, you know, the inauguration went ahead and Trump didn't come back on the 4th of March and he didn't come back on whatever other date that, you know, QAnon people were predicting.
And JFK
some people
Jr.
drop
didn't
off.
Show up in Dallas again to become his vice president last month, you know.
Exactly. But then some people really, some people, you know, are so deep in it. And again, they're stuck in this community that they're afraid to leave it, right? This is, you know, there's also, I kind of guess, a lot of parallels and crossover with cults too. Sometimes it's hard to know where, you know, the likes of a QAnon conspiracy theory ends and a cult begins. They're blurred lines.
there's a bit of me that would like to end on a sort of an upbeat note, but I don't know if this is a sort of thing that has something of a happy ending, because what I was going to ask you was, where do you think it goes from here? Because I guess if you are an adherent to QAnon or another conspiracy theory, you either find yourself too proud to admit that you've got it wrong and to climb down and to see the light, so to speak, or you find yourself clinging to a theory which over time you know will have become bogus or is too harebrained or too far-fetched or too woolly or too revisionist to ever be true. And I don't really think there's a happy ending from that, is there?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, often I'm asked for what is the solution or anything upbeat to say. Look, I mean, I think we are only beginning to understand you know, how this kind of technological revolution of social media and how we now communicate and how we consume information and misinformation is really shaping the world, right? And, you know, I think the way I've sort of rationalized this in my mind is that, you know, this isn't going to be a problem we solve in an election cycle or over the next decade. I think this is going to be kind of one of the defining problems and challenges of the 21st century. And, you know, I think there are some kind of, especially in the US, some quite tough years ahead when we see that, you know, there are a lot of people who don't trust the integrity of elections in the US. So what does that mean for 2022 midterms? Will people not accept the results that they don't like? We will also see that, you know, positions in the US, the people who oversee elections, many of them people kind of heroes today who despite a lot of pressure from Republicans and Trump Republicans, stood by and said, no, these are the results of the election. We have certified them. There are now people running for those positions who are election conspiracy theorists. So what happens in a few years if those people are the people overseeing the election? So I think that the US is going into a I'm stuck for words, but you know, I think it's going to be a challenging few years ahead for the US, and so much of it rooted in lies about the integrity of the election process. So sorry, that's not very uplifting.
well, let's end it then on a more upbeat note, which is that you're going to be the subject of a documentary on RTE next week.
Yes, that is the 4th of January, I believe. It's on after the 9 o'clock news on RT1. You know, kind of speaking of a surreal and overwhelming year, RTE came along to, you know, a kind of behind the scenes of some of the Trump rallies and things that we go to. And they followed us throughout the summer a little bit, and came along to Cara Sevigne as well. So, you know, it's hopefully folks will get something out of us. John King is in there talking a lot about what we've just discussed, the role of that sort of misinformation is now playing in American politics.
CNN's and Kerry's Donia O'Sullivan speaking to me a couple of days ago.
On the Record on News Talk.
Brought to you by PwC. Great minds think unalike. Different skill sets, diverse opinions, it all adds up to the new equation.